The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich? Rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length, where we discuss all things E-Mini, along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Tuesday, 6th day of December, 2011. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow is up 39 points on the session. S&P is flat. The comp is down 11. Gold is down over 1%. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right so far.
How garbled is my audio transmission today?
You personally isn't bad, but the intro that just played right at the end, it was totally garbled. That part of it, but you couldn't understand a word they said. I don't think. But your audio is okay. Strange.
Tremendous.
But anyway. Yeah, so the
comes out beautiful on the podcast.
Dials up a little bit. What's that?
It comes out beautiful on the podcast. Oh, well,
it's
whatever.
Strange. Anyway. we're saying.
I was saying that the markets are a mixed bag. Big trouble in Russia. They're talking about the equivalent of an Arab Spring in Russia. Not happy with the outcome of the elections, etc., and so on. Continuing unrest in Europe. Nobody seems to know what to do, what can fix it. Last week we had there was a slope of hope, and we ran off of that, but that slope of hope may have run out of steam unless somebody comes out and says something or does something to create new hope. New hopium. I don't know. It's a little dicey. The markets have really been in a tug of war this morning, just back and forth, and we're going to see a break one way or the other. I've drawn some trend lines on this chart up here. This is an hourly chart of the S&P 500 E-mini futures, and there are few absolutes in the world of trading, but I absolutely, positively assure you that we're either going to break out to the upside or to the downside. Okay? Now that's a pretty simple statement, so don't think there's anything deep behind it. Just the market's only going to go sideways for so long. And eventually these lines are going to intersect and price is going to get a move on. Will it be to the upside or to the downside? Well, we're going to have to wait and see. We'll keep you posted. Michael, do you want to move into... Let's see. Well, you know what? Let's look at this right here. Because this is a big part of what's going on is the gold issue. Gold down over 1% today. We had a tweet that went out on Sunday night. Consider selling gold, 1746.75 on a stop. Okay. So, right here is where that trade would be triggered. And, I mean, down to 1732, that was just an awesome move in and of itself. And there was a pullback. The MA1 stayed red during that big pullback. And that's an interesting thing to note. It's a one-hour candle. Market really tried to rally there. Broke down back below the MA1. And by the time we got here, we had a 21... our $2,500 per contract drop in gold. But it wasn't done yet. From 1722, it continued down another $13+ to 1707. Again, it attempted a pullback. We even had a change in the MA1 here, where price got above the MA1. The MA1 turned blue. But again, the markets couldn't hold it up. The euro is just rolling sideways looking for some direction. Current setup on the ES, the most imminent thing that we have would be to, well, a little bit of a mixed. On the 2100, we would look for higher prices. On the 10K, lower prices. So those are conflicting right now. So that's a big sign for us to just not do anything from an intraday standpoint. So, in a nutshell, that's the markets. The YM, same thing. Dow, E-mini, back and forth. But Michael is going to cover all that in the recap. And so, Michael, let me go ahead and just pass the mic to you and the screens, and we'll get that on.
All right. I will grab it all.
For those of you visiting for the first time, welcome. Hope you Have a great time. If you have any questions about anything, don't hesitate to just type it into the chat box. We'll be more than happy to answer your questions, whatever they might be. Don't be shy.
Yes. Even during the recording, if you have questions, just type them in, and I'll answer them during the recording. And we'll all be able to go over the question and the answer. So it might be beneficial to everyone. All right, let me just get my recording software going here. It's going to take it a second. I have quite a few things running over here right now. yeah, clunker, as Alan would say. John, okay, well, I see the question in there, and I'll go over one way to do that when I do the recording. Okay, so it will be in the recording. All right.
I've got your charts, if that's what you're waiting on.
Yep, no, but I was waiting for the other recording software to start, and it started now. So I will be able to record here in a couple of seconds. All right, here we go. In 3, 2, 1. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, December 6th. 2011. I'm going to go over the trades that we took in the live trading room this morning, the trades we didn't take, why we took the trades we took, why we didn't take the ones we didn't take, and everything else that set up or didn't set up. And I will also cover one way of trading the weekly trading zones, one way that it could have been traded this morning, and then it could have just been traded here a few minutes ago. All right, so let me start off with the results. On the ES, we got our 2 points. And on the YM, we actually took 2 trades over there on the YM. We had 7 ticks risk on each trade. Each trade used all 7 ticks risk, meaning that it lost 7 ticks on each trade per contract. So we're down 42 ticks on the YM, and we're up 24 ticks on the ES, which puts us green on the day overall, but not by much. Unfortunately. You know, if I hadn't taken any of these YM trades, we would have had just our ES 2 points over here, and that would have been fine. But it is what it is. The trades, I took the trades that set up first this morning, and the first one that set up was the YM trade. So I took that one, and that one failed, and then an ES trade set up, and I took that one. But I hadn't had my 2 point goal yet. Then a YM trade set up, so I took that one, you know, because I was down a little bit. And the second YM trade lost, and that was the end of the morning session. All right, so here we go. This was pretty much the start of the day right here. We were looking to short off the BBC here after we had our break through the elbow. The BBC dropped down below it. We had a fresh bubble here. This area right here is why we couldn't do the short, because we had we actually had a higher low right here, which means the trend may have been changed right here, and this was at 1251.95, and in fact the trend did change right there. We haven't been back to that level since, almost, but you can see the trend did change right there. After that happened, we didn't have any opportunity to trade in here on the 2100 tick, because we're going right into a weekly trading zone up here at 57.58. So we didn't take any trades in there. Once we popped up above it, finally over here, we had another bubble here on the chop bands and a pull back down to the BBC. We got long here, and once we had a point profit in the trade, we moved our stop up to break even. And it's a good thing we did, because it dropped down right over here, right back into the other side of the zone. All right. That gave us an opportunity to short over here. Now, we didn't take the short off of this chart, though we did have a little tiny bubble right here. It just barely got outside the bands. And it was, the pullback up to the BBC was okay right here. The BBC was below the elbow. Everything was okay, but we didn't actually take the trade from over there. We took it from the 2100 tick chart, which is right here. All right, we took that trade right here after the bearish cross right here on the 2100 tick and the pullback up right here. with the cycle being red, headed down below the 50. We took that trade right there. All right, and that gave us our 2 points pretty quickly. So we were pretty happy to get our 2 points there. There was another trade that triggered after that here on the 2100. I took that one as well from 56.25. It gave us a few ticks profit, and I moved my stop up to break even. I was pretty aggressive with my risk on that one, and it took us out at break even. Okay. Those were the only ES trades that I took all day. Those were the only ones that actually set up. The same thing on the over here on the 10K. It set up, but we couldn't trade it here on the 10K because it was going right into support. So we were able to trade it from the 2100 tick, but it was the same timing. The BBC was in the same spot. Everything was looking really good for that trade. You know, I was really confident that trade was going to work out. All right, so that pretty much covered the 4-tick range, 10K, and the 2100 tick for the morning. There were other 2100 tick trades this morning, but we weren't trading going into the weekly trading zones, so we just let them go and we didn't take anything. All right. There's one setting up right here right now, but it is going into the weekly trading zone, so we're not going to do anything with that one. All right. Now there was a question. There was a question a few minutes ago by one of our partners about how to trade the zones. I'll show you one way that one of the partners trades the zones, and he actually said this in the partners meeting a couple weeks ago. It may have even been last week, how he trades the zones, and I'll show you how it would have worked with him this morning. All right. Now, as price is approaching the zone like this, what he would do is put, in order to sell here at the bottom level of the zone with 3 points risk, another order to sell here at the top level of the zone with 2 points risk. So his risk at this point from 58 would be up here at 60, and he would be looking for the thing to move, for all these trades to move a couple points down. All right. So in this case, he got filled on the first one right here. He got filled on the second one over here. And then the market went sideways a little bit. Well, from this first one here at 58, he got his profit target down here. The one that he filled over here at 57, he was looking for that to get down to 55. And it didn't do that till all the way over here. Okay, but he did end up getting his full profit on both of them. Now, did you catch that? Okay, he's telling me it's not quite right. I think it's pretty close, though. But selling right here, selling right there, putting your risk up here, and taking profit down here and over here. You would have been out of both at 12:56. Okay. All right, so he would have taken profit on both trades right here, is what he said. But that's one way to trade it, okay? I just wanted to cover that quickly in here in the recording so you can go back and look at it in the recording, all right? And it's also out in the members area for anyone who is a partner. Okay. If you look at the in the members area on the website, if you are a partner, you can go out there, and it's got text on one of the recordings about how he does that. Is that the first pullback to the new weekly zone? To the weekly zone. It is the pullback to the weekly zone, yes, Robert. Okay. Let me cover the YM over here. All right, the YM trades that I took, why I took them, why I didn't take them. This morning it was 9:45. The market looked like it was heading down. Everything looked like it was moving down here. We had a bearish cross. It pulled back up. We shorted right here on the first pullback up to the BBC with 7 ticks risk, and it stopped us out. And it continued to go all the way up here to the zone. Then we had a pullback right here. We didn't take this trade, but this one obviously worked, but we didn't take it. That one moved up. It was a bullish cross with a pullback. The first pullback to the BBC was right there, and that worked wonderfully. Over here, we had a bearish cross with a pullback to the BBC. Now, we were getting short on the ES at this time, and we weren't going to short the YM into a weekly trading zone, so we didn't take that. What I did take, though, was over here, a divergence trade. When we had this divergence down here on the combo indicator, and price closed down below the MA1 right here. I just realized I have to send the layout to someone. And price closed down below the MA1 right here. I took that trade right there. with 7 ticks risk, and you can see 7 ticks was not nearly enough. We had another opportunity to take the same type of divergence trade right here, and this one right here worked out just fine, but this one right here stopped me out. So those were my two stop outs on the YM. Right now, if we weren't inside a weekly trading zone, we would be looking to go long right here off the BBEC after the bullish cross right there. Okay? Those were the trades from the morning. It was, you know, all in all, the morning was pretty choppy. We didn't have a lot of opportunity. I mean, I'll minimize this so you can see we hung around right up here for a long time. We were right up there. Then over here, we were all over the weekly trading zone all morning. And we're right back at it right now. This, you know, this 57-58 area, we're right back at that area right now. So it's struggling to move down. I think ultimately the thing wants to go down. I think we should go down. But, you know, in the larger picture that Dwayne had put up a few minutes ago on the hourly, you can see that that the market's stuck in a range right now and it's struggling to get out of it. And he is right. He is guaranteed that we are either going to get above or below that those two trend lines that he had drawn on that chart. All right, we're not going to go sideways in between those trend lines forever. All right, guys, that's it. I'm going to wrap it up right here. If you have any more questions, just type them in and I will answer them now. All right. The recording is done. And I do realize I have to put yesterday's and today's up there now. Okay. Today is 12/6/2011. All right. Does anybody have any more questions about any of the stuff that I just went over? Anyone? Nobody? Right now, in all the zones right here, I mean, in all the charts right here, we're going into a weekly trading zone. So what we're expecting from this is for it to come off of the weekly trading zone and probably sell off. That's what I'm looking for. Right now, it's 12:23. What I would like to see is an hourly close at 12:30 Eastern Time, an hourly close down below 12:54. I would like to see that. That would definitely give us a big push down, I think. Okay, I think we would, from there, I think we would get down below 46. That's what I'm thinking at this point. All right. And here's just a little idea of what I'm looking at. I'm looking for it to drop down below this level right here. Okay? If we close down below that level on the hourly chart, then I think we're going to continue down, at least down to this level down here. All right. Anyone, anywhere, any other questions? I am prepared to answer questions at this point, if you have any. If not...
Well, I'm here, and I don't have any questions.
Okay, this one right here, there is a question. Frank says, on the current 4-tick ES chart, there was a George trade at 12:55 quarter. Would you have taken it? Yeah, that was a good George trade, and he doesn't pay any attention to the zones. You know, he doesn't focus on the zones. It was a good trade. The pullback was proper. Everything was good about it. He doesn't move his stop. So if you did get into this, it would have been at 55 quarter. You would have been looking to get up to 57 quarter up here. Okay, so it went the full 2 points from entry to exit. It had a drawdown of 3 ticks. So that was a nice trade right there. I don't know that I would have taken it this morning, though, the way that the zones have held all morning. Okay, I know George would have taken it. George probably did take it. George is probably, if he didn't get filled at 57 quarter, he's probably still in it. But there was one George trade earlier this morning that we pointed out. I think it was right over here. Yeah, 55.75 right over here. And I didn't take that one either because it was going right into a zone. he took that one, and right here it came within a tick of stopping him out. Right here it came within a tick of hitting his profit target. But he just left his bracket on, his two-point bracket on, and he eventually got paid right over here, you know, when it went up through his target. But that's the way that George takes his trades. He puts the stops in, you know, he puts the bracket on and leaves it alone. Just sets it and forgets it. As long as the entry is right, then any other criteria that happen during the trade just don't matter. At the end of the day, the results, if you want your results to look like what you've shown in, you know, any back testing you've done or any testing that you've done, forward testing, then you have to do it the same exact way as you had accounted for in your testing. Okay.
All right, again, for all of you who are new, we'd like to welcome you. Thanks for coming, hanging out with us. We do this 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. Our live trading room is from the opening bell, 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Eastern. If you've not taken the free trial in the past and you would like to have a look, come hang out, no credit card, no obligation. Go to cfrn.net/apply. It's that simple. If you've taken a free trial in the past and you weren't able to take full advantage of it, send an email to secondchance@cfrn.net. Give me a sentence, a paragraph, a short essay on why you weren't able to take advantage the first time around. And we will, in our next closed-door board meeting, discuss you and your individualized plan of action. All right? Which means we'll probably give you a second shot. Okay? We believe in second chances. So send an email, secondchance@cfrn.net. Tomorrow is Thursday. No, tomorrow's Wednesday. All right. That means yesterday was Monday, right?
Correct.
I'm really catching on.
You are catching
Thursday
on.
Thursday night is partners meeting. So for everyone who is on the free trial right now, if you want to be in the partners meeting, which actually is a closed door meeting, and man, we had a great time last Thursday night. One of our partners spoke for close to an hour and just shared some really great things, which I'm in the process of turning into an audio file. I haven't done that, but I'm working on it in my head anyway. So if you want to be in the partners meeting, you got to be a partner. That kind of goes without saying, right? Otherwise, we'd call it an anybody meeting. If you want to be a partner, you need to send an email to support@cfrn.net. If you want to do some one-on-one go-to meeting kind of stuff, get a feel for the platform, get a feel for the indicators, I'm going to give you two suggestions here. Call Bert at 866-928-3310. He's with Daniels Trading. He's our broker. He and Leslie, they work together as a team. Bert will be happy to set up a go-to meeting with you and just kind of go through some individualized training with you on the platform, on the indicators, so that you are able to make an informed and intelligent decision if our trading methodology is right for you. Again, our indicators and methodology work well across all markets and all time frames. You can also send an email to Michael, tech@cfrn.net. He doesn't have as much free time as Bert does, because Bert's kind of just kicking it in his chaise lounge out by the pool, you know, fielding calls. Michael is doing other stuff. So, but seriously, call Bert. He'll answer the phone, usually by the third ring, or Leslie. And if you need to take it another notch up and some real specific questions on an indicator or something, shoot that email out to Michael. He'll get a hold. Be sure and include your phone number in the email so that as he has time available, he can call you, discuss the issue with you. If it has to do with becoming a partner, again, you can email him with your phone number. He'll be happy to give you a call, discuss that, and take you to the next level. All right.
Very nice.
I'm glad I recorded that. I did that well.
Yeah, I did. You did that very well.
It just comes on me sometimes. I don't know. Life's crazy like that. All right, anything else we want to add, talk about, make fun of before we go to our good friend David Williams at PageTrader.com?
Let's see. We got the partners meeting. Swing
check.
Trades.
Check.
We have. Yeah, that's pretty good. I think that's pretty much it that I can think of right now.
Check, check, check.
Everything's good. Check.
All right, guys, we're going to pause for a short station identification, or in this case, a short station identifi-garble, and then we'll be right back.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310. And we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
Welcome to my show. How am I? I'm doing fine, and I hope you guys are doing well as well. We have very cold weather in Las Vegas. We were down to apparently maybe as low as 29 today, which is pretty cold for Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. In Arizona, it's freezing up in the mountains up above, high above the world's largest amusement park, where Dwayne lives next to. Dwayne, what is your temperature there?
You know, tonight it's actually supposed to get down to 32.
Okay.
So the last night, the wife wanted to go out with the bed sheets and cover all the shrubs and the plants, and I said, oh, honey, gosh. Because the thing is when we get to this time of year here, you have to cover them at night and then uncover them in the morning and then cover them at night. And so... I said, let's just buy ourselves one more day.
And what are you covering? What kind of plant do you have to cover?
Has all kinds of bushes and shrubs and plants, and we lost.
Okay.
We had some big ficus trees that, 2 years ago. We lost, and our neighbor across the street last year, she bought hers from the nursery, the kind they bring in with the big, almost like a crane kind of a deal, and plop it in your backyard and plant it for you. And last year, when it got cold, she went out and bought this stuff called, it's like spray in a can called Cloud Forest or something. You spray. She had me up on a ladder at like 10 o'clock at night, all over this tree, spraying this tree. Dead. Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't get that cold. I mean, it got down to like, I don't know, maybe 30, 29, 30, and then it only stays that way a couple of hours, and then the sun comes
out. Well, you know, in the end,
what
killed it was that spray.
I'm thinking, because she bought the spray from the people that sold her the tree,
mm-hmm.
and the tree's covered against disease, pestilence, rot, but not frost. So I think this was a frosting agent. They go, here's your $600 tree. Oh, and here, let us sell you this can of stuff to protect your tree.
Yeah.
Make sure you spray this on your tree. So we can sell you another tree.
Right. And then you'll be back. Nice. Guaranteeing give you another tree out there.
Job security.
Well, that's interesting. Anyway, and Michael, what about your temperature?
Actually, it's been really, really mild here.
98.5?
About 60 degrees or something like that.
Okay.
And that's really mild for us.
Well, good enough. Many years ago, I looked at temperature charts because I was... I was actually in an office somewhere. It was a government office, and they had temperature charts on the wall. And I was struck by the fact that temperature charts move in trends. I had never seen one before. And so they had graphed out the temperature of that area, which happened to be Boulder City, Nevada. And there it was, going up, pulling back, basing, going up higher,
trending. I mean, it was really quite a thing to look at it, because it looked either like a close-only chart on stocks, or perhaps just like a line chart of what stocks or commodities would do. And I thought that was very interesting. And of course, again, I've said this so many times on the program, there's a natural law to weather as well. Weather is not random in the least. Weather has its own laws that it follows, and you know, there's a way of charting the same way that you would chart technical analysis of the markets or of real estate. You could do the same thing with a weather chart and probably come up with very important, I was going to say price levels, but temperature levels that the market would reach, and even come up with forecasts for where the temperature would need to be potentially on a certain day or hour, that sort of thing. The same kind of thing that you could do with various stocks and commodities.
Robert L., I just got to say, I love you. I love your sense of humor. I'm so glad you show up here every day.
Are you going to share that with us?
He asked the question, does reflective wave work with weather trends? But he put it in a kung fu context. He said, does the reflective way,
right,
W-A-Y,
that's good. That's very clever. Reflective way.
Aww.
It's a special. Aww. You have to stand in a certain way and attack the markets. No, that's very clever and funny, and it probably does, although you would have to have some way of getting those temperature charts on your screen. Now, listen, everything is in a state of fluctuation. There isn't anything you can point to that isn't fluctuating. Bring me something that isn't fluctuating. You can't find it. Even if they bring it down to the coldest absolute zero that they can get, it still is fluctuating, because there is no fixed object in the universe, not one. And since everything's in a state of fluctuation, that fluctuation is contained by law. So that means it's not just the markets, it's not just temperature, it's not just your heartbeat, it's everything. The whole darn shooting match, the whole creation is fluctuating. It's in movement. Slow or fast, it's in movement. And all of that movement is under law, one way or the other. All the way down to, and of course we know, don't we, that even going down to the atomic level, we've seen what atoms look like and are made of. And right down there is a kind of a subsystem of the whole way the universe is set up, maybe even a fractal of it, where there's a nucleus and there's a bunch of bodies rotating around it, and each one of those bodies has a distance from the center and has a speed and is rotating and is all doing it. You know, that very table you're sitting in front of that's made out of wood, it's vibrating.
You know,
it doesn't look to you like it's moving, but it's moving.
One summer at band camp, I met this lady who said she could change my vibrational rate for $5 at a street fair.
Well, that's cheap. That's inexpensive. A vibrational rate change normally is much more expensive than that. But when you're, you know, if she was asked saying that to your parents, it might have been much more expensive.
Can you see human auras, David?
No.
No.
I don't make any psychic claims at all.
Okay. I'm just curious because, you know, some people claim they can. I can't.
No. I can't.
I did have a picture taken one time by this guy who had a fancy camera. You probably
Yeah, that's
heard
called Curlian photography.
Exactly.
And that's where they use the electrical energy in your body to sort of interfere and put onto a picture.
Yep.
And it's an old trick.
It is.
That's all it is. It's an attempt to read magnetic or electromagnetic fields around. There's better ways to do it, and there really are electromagnetic fields around things.
Mm-hmm.
And some people do claim to be able to read auras. I doubt it, to be honest with you, but I wouldn't totally discount it that somebody has, because they've already found that people's brains are wired differently. There's certain people that are born with different kinds of connections. As an example, there was a program on TV that showed a number of people who they knew were wired differently because, as an example, a woman whose brain was wired in such a way that when she heard music, it would turn into visual representations in front of her. I mean, her brain was actually like hologram putting a visual representation. She was actually seeing it internally, not externally. So she was connected in a whole bunch of ways. She had sounds were connected to light. Light was connected to music. I mean, things were all connected up. So people do have different, most people are probably relatively the same, but some people are connected differently, wired differently. But even that wiring doesn't necessarily mean that you would be able to see auras, but I wouldn't 100% want to discount that ability that somebody, because people do emit something. You are emitting, you know, you are a transmitting station of both your particular kind of energy, and you've met people before where you get a bad or unusual feeling from them, and maybe unknown to them, maybe known or unknown to them, they're putting out something. And so are you. You're the very way you walk, the very, you enter a room and you are transmitting something to everybody in that room. Whether or not you're in fear, whether or not you're insecure or secure, whether or not you're interested or not interested. And then there's a second level of that sort of unspoken level of something that you are putting out, some kind of a, you know, if you want to say, for lack of a better word, a vibe.
Robert just commented that dogs can sense it. We were at a street fair this weekend in Glendale, and there was a lady there who does rescue dogs, and she's written a book, and the one dog that she had with her, they were all, I think, all schnauzers. And the one, they were all trained as service dogs. They were originally rescue dogs, and then they trained them as service dogs. And the one dog was actually her mother's dog, and it could detect not only when her mother was going to have a seizure. Mm-hmm. I mean, this dog could give the mother a heads up, hey, you're about to have a seizure. He could also tell her when her blood sugar was too high or too low.
Mm-hmm. No, I believe that, and I'm not sure that that's a psychic or other ability. I think it may also simply be a very high,
psychic,
highly tuned observational ability that animals have.
Exactly, yeah. You know, and I saw a thing on a young man on CBS Sunday Morning recently, and I know there are a lot of people like this, and you always hear people talk about, you know, photographic memories, and but this this young man, he literally remembers everything that has ever happened in his life. And they flew him in a helicopter over the New York skyline. And then he went back to the studio and spent 3 days recreating the whole thing from memory.
By memory.
They went through and tested all the different buildings and stuff, and they found a couple of errors, like, well, this building here actually has five windows and you only put three. And, I mean, it's just... It's incredible. I mean, you see things on the tabloid sometimes, you wonder if they're true. But, I mean, this was a pretty exhaustive study of this young man, and it was amazing.
That's interesting, and there's another fellow who has a memory that is so extensive that they haven't found the limit to it yet. And what he does, one of the things that he does, he's also very intelligent. He is able to sit down and... you know how the number pi goes out infinitely, or there's a number of setups mathematically that will do that, and he will go out like 1,000 numbers, and he's not doing the calculating in his head. He's actually remembered each and every one of those digits out 1,000 or 2,000, and it takes hours for him to read it all off. And they've measured him. He's in the Guinness World Book of Records. His memory is virtually endless. They don't know where, how, you know, he can not only remember it, but he can find it and locate it. And interestingly, when they asked him how internally he is doing this, what can he say about his own internal actions? Because many people would say, I don't know what I'm doing. That it just comes up. I just sort of want it and it shows up in my mind. But what he was doing was he was converting numbers into pictures, and the pictures were sort of like a boulder. I know this sounds really strange, but kind of like a boulder with shades on it, with sort of a shaded area. And each boulder and each shaded area represented a number. And somehow his mind would make that conversion, and he's the guy with the longest memory of any of us. I forgot his name, but he's pretty young. And then on top of that, he's very intelligent because they brought him over to Danish land, and they had him. Danish is a very difficult, very unusual language to learn. And he learned it in like 3 days, you know, which is just ridiculous. He could converse with people in 3 days because he had a memory that could put, you know, not only numbers but words and sounds together, just literally almost like a walking computer. So, yeah, people are wired differently, and that's why we're kind of on that subject saying that, yeah, there are some people that can do things that are different than others because they're just, in a sense, built a little bit differently. Is there such a thing as ESP? Is there such a thing as telekinesis or, you know, moving objects or all that stuff? Probably. Those things probably do exist, I would say, if somebody was to ask me. Can most people do it? Probably not. Do most people in their life sometime have some very profound insight or what could be called ESP or premonition or something? Yes, I think probably true. I think most people do get into that a certain little internal location where they're just connected in for a second somehow. They don't know how they got there. And yes, there's people who have the ability to demonstrate certain things that are beyond our understanding. They don't understand them. They just know how to do them. They can just make it happen. They feel something. They wind something up. Something goes on inside of them. They can't really explain it, but they're able to do it. So, you know, the world's got all kinds of possibilities, and it's, you know, to be a human being seems like it's limited in certain areas, but I think the limitations are really not as limiting as they appear. Do you need to have that stuff to live a really nice life? No, of course not. But I think it is very likely that those things are possible and doable, not through a quote-unquote supernatural means, but simply through the means that we're not utilizing right now, that there is power in you, in the universe, in the whole creation that is waiting to be used. We don't know how to use it, and perhaps the very desire to use it is an impediment to using it. Who knows? But I think it's probably true that all those things are there. They're not going to make you a happier human being. They're not going to make you less evil. They're not going to make you more good. They're simply available if somebody wanted to work to have them. And then once you have them, you're out there showing them off, and you know, you're going to be in the circus, which is not a bad gig if you've got some really good powers. I've always wondered about the what's the thing of the circus where you go in and the person's laughing? What do they call that? And they make you laugh?
The House of laughing. Mirrors?
What's that?
The House of Mirrors? No.
No, not that. Can't remember it, but
I'm not sure.
Somebody's in a room, and they laugh, and they're laughing in front of you, and that gets you to start laughing.
I've never been in that one. I haven't seen that.
Oh. Okay. Well, this is a show about markets, Dwayne. We should move right on to them now, shouldn't we? And your voice is breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, I think we got some audio difficulty. I got to get my guy out here, man. Yep,
yeah, you're starting to sound a little like R2-D2 out of Star Wars, except he was a little clearer.
One of the problems is you never know if it's the webinar software, which it could be, because they're you know, they're increasing their load daily, and so they have to scale out to handle that. But then there's also the my end issue. However, yeah, I'm thinking.
Are you starting to clear up here a little bit now?
Well, that's good. Yeah, my chart's logged back in. I'm thinking. I'm back to remember. The guys came. They brought me the brand new.
I had to open my mouth.
Cable modem. Right.
Sounds like Peter.
Dwayne, it might be better if you stop talking.
All right.
What's that, Bert?
It sounds like Peter Frampton.
Yeah, you. That's good. You sound like Peter Frampton. You know, do you feel like I do? You know. Okay, Dwayne. you're out of the game for a little while here until your stuff starts working again, because it's really messed up. Hopefully in a minute here it'll clear up. But while that's happening, let's talk about the S&P, and let's talk about a couple other markets as well. Let's start today. Let's not start with the S&P for just a minute. We have a very quiet day going on. Let's go over to gold, because this was something that I had mentioned to the listeners yesterday. And we had originally had a forecast that was made on December 1st for gold to advance from about 1742 to 43 back up to 1761, which was due on December 2nd. And the next day the market did advance up there. And this was the day that we talked about just buying the silly thing, just get in, and the likelihood would be that it would go up. And it was about a 16-point move up. And on that day, we also had a forecast for the market to top on December 5th and then move down an initial 22 points, but then a total of about 45 points from whatever the current high was. So the high was 1767. And the call was for the decline down to 22. Yesterday, during the program, the market was trading at about 1733, 32 area. And I had mentioned that it still needs to go down to 22. So I don't know if anybody shorted that or did anything with it. Probably not. But it did ultimately yesterday continue on down and made a swing low of 1721. And then today they continued lower. And they're starting to firm up now. So gold is starting to show the early signs for an important reversal in today's market. So that's interesting. And that will put another, just for those of you who want to follow along on this, because gold is very tradable. It's a big boys market, because you do have to have, by big boys, I don't want to make people feel like, you know, it's not for them. But you have to have a margin account that can allow you to hold overnight, because many of these types of positions would require, if you're going to pick up $40 or $50, it could be done in one day, but in many cases it's going to require an overnight position. So keep that in mind. That's what I mean by big boys market. Because, Bert, what are the margins on gold? Are you still with us?
Yeah, I am. Let me check, because they change. They don't change every day, but they change often enough. But the beauty about the gold market is that they do offer mini and micro contracts, so they do make them affordable. But to answer your question, two more clicks. Oh, okay. There we go. Gold margins at the exchange level. Let's call it COMEX Gold, 8,499, which, by the way, is extremely high.
Yes.
For gold. Mini gold is 2,833, and micro gold is 1,148 bucks. Liquidity in the micro and the mini obviously are not as big as the big one, but gives you some flexibility to participate without the big margin requirement.
No doubt, and that's a nice thing. The gold does swing nicely to its targets. The metals, just in general, I've noticed, are very good with the way they trade, and because the volatility is there. I do want to say, I speak to a lot of traders. I know a lot of different people in the markets. The volatility is a trader's friend, because they want to make the bigger swing. They want to catch a bigger move. But when the volatility gets larger than usual, then it actually starts to work against traders, because for one reason or another, it either agitates or causes people to act incorrectly. And in many ways, it'll amplify whatever your Achilles heel is. So whatever problem you have in your trading, it'll show up much larger. If you're too aggressive on your entries, well, in a normal market, that's fine. It won't go too far against you. In a volatile market, it'll go a little further against you. But in a super volatile market, which is the kind of markets that we have, it'll go way the heck against you. And your aggressive entry can often get stopped out a number of times before the move that you may have correctly called occurs. Then, on the other side, if you didn't call it correctly and the market's moving against you, in a normal market, you'll take a reasonable loss. In a volatile market, you'll take a larger one. In a super volatile market, you'll get hit very hard. And it's not that easy to take that because you're not used to seeing losses in that size. And then that loss, that size of that loss, alters your normal psychology, and now your game starts to change suddenly. Now, because you've taken a larger than usual hit or a number of them, you start to change your game, and before you know it, the market owns you. Because you have to come to the market with a plan to trade it, and if you let the market tell you how to trade it, or if you are going to chase the market, essentially, which is the same thing, you know, that's how it ends up owning you. You have to have a very good idea of what your program is, whatever it is, whether it's a trend following program, which is its own plan, or any other type of setup where you're trying to buy and sell the market. If you get to a point where they do hurt you or show you volatility larger and you take larger losses, if you can tell that your own game is being changed, it's wiser not to trade. It really is better just to take a short break from trading rather than try to chase, because you end up in so many cases doing, potentially anyway, doing the wrong thing to fix that problem, because the market just has a way of doing that. So we just want to be real careful in these ultra volatile markets to be sure that you are managing the risk and managing your own emotions if something larger than usual happens to you. That the larger than usual could also be a profit. It's not all on the downside. Making larger than usual profits can also alter your game. So just keep that in mind. I mean, I've been through this for 20 years. That's not the longest time, but it's been long enough for me to see a number of different market conditions and see myself struggling or succeeding through those conditions one way or the other, and the aftermath they have on your accounts. Trading really ought to be pretty fun to do. It shouldn't be torture. I've gone on YouTube and I've watched a number of videos from people who are trading in the markets, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of anger, a lot of swearing, a lot of and they're being honest. I mean, they're very frustrated, they're very pent up and very angry about always getting stuck in the same position over and over again. I have news for you. If you're always getting stuck in the same position again and again, it's because you're putting yourself in the same position again and again. It's not that the market's necessarily doing it to you. I know it sure looks like it is. I mean, I've definitely seen it for myself where it looks like they are doing it to you. But another thing that happens with this is that if you're trying to go for larger dollar amounts, like either by trading for a larger swing or by trading larger numbers of contracts, and Bert can probably go along with this, the people who trade in larger contract sets, they're stepping up and sort of becoming more of a target, in a sense, for the market, if you want to think of it in these terms, whereas the guy who's trading for smaller amounts, he's behind several levels. The guy that's trying to, you know, put on 1,000 or contracts or more or whatever to, you know, go get part of a big swing. And my suggestion to the people who want to trade really large is that they don't get busy around the edges right at the turns, because there's a lot of back and forth there, which can really be unnerving, especially when you have a larger position on. It's to be in the trend as it starts to really develop, whether based on breakouts or other factors that are quite a distance in many cases from the actual turn. Most traders are very uncomfortable trading at those levels, and I have found that those levels produce some of the best and easiest to hold trades on the block, but they're non-intuitive because we're so used to wanting to trade at the edges being at the turns. And I do trade at the turns, but I also will trade at other levels and other places to take advantage of what often is a much easier trade than trading at the right at the turn. So anyway, so with regard to gold, couple of things I wanted to mention before we move on. We have a date coming up of December, I think it's December 9th, in gold that I do want to focus on. There's some other things that can happen before then. The last roadmap for gold, was basically a $4,000 roadmap from the swing high down to 22. Yesterday, if anybody wanted to take it, there's still $1,000 in it down to 22. But around December 8th to December 9th, if we have nothing else before then, that will also be an important date for a really nice turn in gold. And we'll have more details as we get a little closer to that. I don't know if there's any question or any.
Bob had a question. Is that day trading or overnight? And Bob, I typed back a question to you that you might not have seen, Bob R., to clarify that. I'm not sure which market or which statement David might have made that you were referring to. And if you can clarify that, if you're still there, Bob, we'll be happy to address that. Also, Cliff just typed in a message that Corzine has been subpoenaed to appear before the House Agriculture Committee.
Yes.
That's a bunch of hacks.
Yeah.
House Agriculture Committee. Okay.
John Corzine, yeah, that's good. John Corzine is the guy that was running MF Global, and that's the one where customer segregated funds, including my own, were taken, and bets were placed on it in European bonds, and I guess those bets were not good bets. They lost money, and apparently those funds are just gone, and someone's going to have to make those up. So I know a number of people who were over there that unfortunately had much larger accounts, but I also had an account over there as well, and I'm waiting to hear back from them about when and if that money will come back. Certainly, my belief is, and even though it may have happened in the past, my belief is in this day and age, if a brokerage is going to bet with other people's segregated money and lose, then we're going to lose a lot of, and those people don't get their money back if they're not made whole by the exchanges or by another government bailout, then the exchanges are going to lose a lot of belief in the system. And people are going to tend to shy away from putting any big money in exchanges because on any given day it could just disappear because they're betting with your money. I mean, seriously, that money should be paid back immediately to the people. Somebody should be stepping up to make that system believed in, because if they don't, I worry about the whole structure of the markets. I mean, Bert, do you have anything you want to say about that, or am I?
No, there'll be a breach of confidence. I mean, trust has been violated. That is a thing. As far as MF Global is concerned, 60% of the cash balances have been returned. They're working on, I think, another 15%. However, I think past that level, you're going to have to fill out a claims form. Mm-hmm. Your broker should have given that to you already. But you're going to have to, I guess, sit in line or figure out, they'll have to figure out at some point how they're going to make everyone whole. But I agree. Certainly, the integrity of the whole business is somewhat in jeopardy. So you really have to, you have to watch who you do business with, and it will bring on much more regulation.
Yeah, I mean, these businesses, they don't want regulation. Businesses don't want to be overregulated. But if you're just going to steal customers' money and bet on it, place net long and net short bets on it, and then you get popped doing that. Well, yeah, there's going to be regulation, Wall Street. You know, these people should be hung out to dry. If John Corzine has lots and lots of money of his own, and if he did this, I'd like to go on record saying that he needs to pay some money back to people and help make them whole if he's part of this.
Well, I think he's going in front of that committee, in the next couple of days. I actually know the guy, James Katulis, who's actually, he's got a coalition against the whole, everybody, MF Global, Corzine, the whole nine yards. And he's got tons of money with them, and he's picking a fight with everyone.
Okay, we have lost everything and everybody. Oh, the internet. I don't know if that thing's ever going to catch on or not. We are trying to reconnect. David, are you there?
That's a question mark.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's unfortunate. Okay. So, with gold, we'll take a look at that. There may be another roadmap for gold also, even as early as today. And I want to remind listeners of that if they want to, they can become a Messenger Pro subscriber. Listeners to this program, to Dwayne's CFRN.net radio program, can pick up Messenger Pro for $229 by simply calling in, and we'll give it to you. It's normally $349 for a month, and this window will contain all of the different roadmaps that are available. So you won't just get the S&P, but you'll also get any euro or gold or any other setups that are in there. So you can rest assured that whether or not they're mentioned on the program or not, that you'll have them already and you can take good advantage of them. I really like trading off of roadmaps because, generally speaking, they're giving me two or three very important pieces of information, even if I don't trade the entire move. If gold is supposed to go down from 67 as a high, 1767, down to 1722, that tells me the trend is down. So already I know a piece of information that others might not have, that the actual trend is down, number one. Number two, if the trend is down, I can go use reflected wave, our turning point methodology, which we do train people in. If you'd like to take a look at that, you can go to masterforecastercourse.com and read about that, masterforecastercourse.com. We can use reflected wave to sell short on rallies to get into a short position for further decline. And finally, when the market is declining, there are important key levels that they're going to hit, minimum on the downside. In spite of the fact that 22 is the big target, there's levels before then where we can exit positions and manage the risk by taking some profits. And so all of that, even if we don't hold for the full target, all of that is very useful information, and it helps me put together a really much better trade than I might put in, you know, just in normal conditions. So the more information you have, in most cases, not actually in some cases, if you have too much information, it almost starts to work against you. But this is information that is very simple and direct. We're turning here. We're going to go down to this level. Let's get in and take advantage of this. Very much like I was mentioning yesterday. Hey, we still have 10 points to go. It was up at 33 or whatever. Still have 10 points to go on the downside. We should get down to 22 minimum. And today they've gone substantially lower. We've gone down to 1705, and they're starting to show some turn here. So the gold is there, and we may have something else. If you want, if you're interested and want to go to pagetrader.com, you can take a look and get a subscription for Messenger Pro, and we'll have all of the different roadmaps inside the Messenger window, and you can start taking advantage of these both hourly and daily roadmaps in different markets.
You have a new product coming out, right?
Well, we have a new window.
A new window.
It's actually
okay.
Just an updated window
okay.
That's going to allow us to take larger risk than 1.5 points, because that's sort of built into our system. And we're not taking larger risk because we just want to throw away money. We're taking larger risk because some of these other roadmaps, daily or even hourly, would require somewhat larger risk if you want to really participate in it and not get stopped out. If you're going to pick up an 18-point swing, it is true, sometimes you can get in with 1.5 points risk and you caught it and it's perfect and it runs. Over time, you're going to see that the number gets larger, that you have to risk more to get these larger roadmap swings. So that's why we're in changing the Messenger window around a little bit, to allow us to arbitrarily put in the risk for a given trade. It won't be fixed. And this is because these other roadmaps like gold and others, like on this gold trade, you know, let's just go back to that. Let's take a look at what kind of risk a person would have had to have to have effectively traded this trade. In spite of the fact that it might have worked with less risk, let's just take a look at what ordinarily we would say you might need to do here. When the market made the high on December 2nd, which was forecast for the top, it then had a counter trend rally. It sold off and had a counter trend rally the next day on the 4th, which was Sunday. This is a Globex thing. That would have been one opportunity to get in. But in order to get in, let's say you even got in there maybe at 1755, well, the market had made a high of 1767. So we're talking about risking something on the order of 12 or 14 points potentially for you to be able to stay with that trade to go collect 45 points. Now, that may be more than you want to risk on one trade, and we understand that, and that's a much larger risk than normal. And in many cases, you can mitigate that down. You could take the swing high that they made during Globex, let's just say that was an ordinary swing high during the day session, and you could place a stop somewhat above those highs and wouldn't have to go all the way to the extreme. But either way, the idea is we want to be in the trade and we want to allow for larger risk. So, because the reward is going to be larger. Over time, risk and reward work together. They're really two parts of the same coin. And although you can get a very large reward with a very small risk, over time it tends to balance out and you need to have larger risk in order to catch that larger reward. So, that's what we're doing. That's our story, and we're sticking to it.
Good.
So let's move over to the euro now. This is a market that we're watching for the potential for, we've been talking for now, we're into our second week, of calling for the market to have bottomed on the week of November 21st and then have a multi-week advance up to 136.70 or higher. Now, the euro has a lot of news around it. Everything is looking at Europe right now, and everything's looking at Europe because Europe is out of money. And Europe is out of money because they essentially ran their country like a socialistic enterprise, and socialism works as long as you don't run out of other people's money. And that's what's happened. They've taxed everybody. They've spent it all. They've obligated themselves way beyond what they've spent. So they've not only spent, but they've got way huge future obligations. And it just turns out that system just doesn't work. I don't know how many times we have to see this in the history of America and the history of the world. Socialism doesn't work as a fact. It just doesn't work out that way. It turns out that it crashes and burns and has every time. Now, any society can crash and burn for any number of reasons, but right in front of us, we're watching socialism crash and burn again. And by socialism, I mean where everyone is supposed to basically get the same thing, everyone's covered by the government, a lot of responsibility is diffused. Self-responsibility goes away, and the government takes everything. And the government grows, and society, in a sense, shrinks. The economy shrinks, government grows. That's what's happened here. By the way, our economy is shrinking and the government is growing. The government is now 25 or 30% larger than it was when this fellow took office, this administration took office. And it not only has it grown, but also we've gone from $8 trillion in debt to now $15 trillion in debt, four of which, 4.4 or something, is directly a result of the spending of this administration. So as long as you grow government and have the economy shrink, you're on your way to what we see in Europe. I mean, that's what it is. I'd like somebody to counter that and show me where we're wrong about that. That's what happens. Now, this administration didn't cause this crash. They exasperated it in some ways by spending $4 trillion trying to, quote-unquote, fix it. But the crash was going to happen anyway, and it had already begun in the previous administration. The decline had already begun. But everything this administration has done has failed in a bold way in trying to fix this, and we're going to have four more years of those attempted fixes if he gets into office again. He doesn't know what to do with this. They don't know what to do with this. Some of the people in this administration are really living in an alternate universe where they really don't see what's happening in the real world and somehow have are describing to themselves a very different universe than the one that ordinary people on planet Earth are living in America.
Based on the polls, Newt has really surged. He's way ahead of Romney now in the polls. And I was reading an article this morning, and it said, you know, we could give you all kind of sophisticated metrics, blah, 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 but the bottom line is old people like Newt.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, okay. So if nothing changes and no one else steps forward, it looks like that's going to be the election, will be the current sitting president and Newt Gingrich.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that we're 3 months away from the Iowa deal, but
yeah.
Who knows what could happen between now and then. But currently, he's like, in the latest round of polls, he is far above Mitt Romney. So, and I know that Mitt Romney has a, you know, I mean, Newt, if... I don't really know the history of these guys. I'm not a political junkie. But Mitt is a businessman. He knows how to turn a profit, you know, or have a balanced budget or whatever you would call it. Newt, on the other hand, is a career politician, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Has Newt ever been involved in private industry? Has he ever owned a company or made a payroll?
Probably not, okay. But I'm not sure.
So... You know, I was listening to some man in the street interviews the other day when I was driving, and it really struck me as interesting. I understand exactly where this person was coming from, but when they were asked, who do you want to be the next president? They said, I don't know, but I can tell you who I don't want. And they said, oh, okay, who don't you want? I don't want a career politician or a Washington insider.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, again, I understand where that person's coming from, but okay, so we're going to send Joe the Plumber to be president of the United States of America. I mean, it's very
That's not the only alternate.
Well, it's very idealistic to say you don't want a politician and you don't want a Washington insider. But
true.
But someone who doesn't understand politics and who doesn't understand the way Washington works, I don't know how much they can get done. And people will go, well, how about Reagan? Well, okay, well, Reagan, he had some experience. He was the governor of California. Right?
And a damn fine actor.
And a very good actor. Now, my question, and I asked this, I think it was the other day in the live trading room, perhaps, or maybe it was in a partners meeting, but you weren't there to weigh in on this. Who in the history of the United States has been a president that that was not considered to be a quote-unquote career politician?
Most of them have, I suppose. They've been in Washington. Most of them have. There may have been one. And a lot of them, we've talked about this before on the program, that a lot of people who have been businessmen and very successful ones have failed consistently to get big votes, even though the government might apparently need a businessman in there to really take a look at the spending and all the other stuff. But that's not the guy that usually gets voted in. And if history were to repeat itself, Mitt Romney would have no chance of becoming president of the United States because of if he's pitching himself as a businessman that knows how to go in, that would be unfortunate for him because that has not worked. It doesn't mean it won't work in the future. But as a general rule, looking back over time, the businessman turned politician has failed miserably. That does not work in Washington. At least it doesn't work to get you into Washington. So, for whatever reason, those people have not been voted in. We can name a whole bunch of them going all the way back to the little guy with the big ears and further.
Now, yes, somebody typed in Carter, but he was actually the governor of Georgia. Cliff had put that in. Now, here's the thing. The other night, it was the partners meeting when I brought this up and I put the question out. And the answer that came back, it was a striking answer, but not really totally correct. And the answer was General George Washington.
Okay.
And that's, in fact, what he was, a general. But he became very much involved in the politics of this country before he was made president, if that HBO miniseries is to be believed. I forget the one, the most recent one they had that was really, really good. Had that one actor, Can't think of his name. That was good. You know, some. Let's see. Eisenhower, they say, was not a career politician. I don't know. But Cliff knows. I'll take that, Cliff. Mark says, just checked, has a doctorate in history and was a university professor prior to all his work in government. Any other of his so-called business experience has been these activities which have been questioned since he has not been in government. Mark, who are you?
You know, I'll tell you, Dwayne, one of the things I think, I'm sorry to interrupt, if you want to finish your thought, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the reasons I think businessmen don't necessarily make it into government is because I think one of the backdrops of what people are looking for in government is they're looking for leadership. They're looking for a theme, a spirit, so to speak, a country-wide spirit, a theme, leadership. And a pure businessman, a technocrat, somebody that's going to go in and balance the books and all that stuff, that's not what – I mean, that may need to be done. And certainly, God knows, that needs to be done in this economy and in this with this government. But people are looking for leadership first prior to these other skills. That's what I think may be happening. And so many times businessmen may come across as just bean counter types, that Ross Perot type or – a few of the other ones that I can't remember their names, and there's no real leadership feeling right there. There is a component, certainly, to politics where leadership and charisma and these kinds of things, I mean, Barack Obama's own rise to fame was, you know, centered on his rock star charisma. The man had an enormous charisma, very natural, doesn't even have to think about it. It's just right there. We've all tired of it a little bit. We all know now, you know, what the game is, et cetera. But it was very powerful in getting him into office because he really did represent hope and change at the time. And it was very believable because it appeared that he was going to go in and he knew what he was doing, and that charisma and that, you know, apparent leadership that he had really got people to just, you know, landslide him into office and overrun even the Clinton, you know, machine. So that's probably why the businessman, you know, turned politician doesn't generally work, is because there are leadership qualities that some of these other people, whether they really have it or not, they surely appear to have leadership qualities and speak in much broader terms to people that people understand. People understand I'm going to balance the books, but they're not going to vote for a guy who's going to balance the books. They're going to vote for a guy who has leadership qualities and theme and all these other things. That's kind of what I'm thinking, why it hasn't worked.
Well, you may be right. Robert comments, people want movie stars, not leaders.
Yeah. Yeah, movie stars look like leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked about it, how Abraham Lincoln would have a very difficult time getting elected today simply because of his appearance.
Yeah, Jesus Christ would have a tough time getting in many churches today just because of his appearance.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, you got that appearance thing working for you or working against you in many cases. That's the final insult, though, isn't it? That he can't get into a church and the church is based on his teachings. You know?
I know. Yeah, it's called hypocrisy.
We won't go there.
Mark says that I guess his question was an answer to my, has Newt ever been involved in a running a business?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, not really, except there's four companies that he had some involvement with. One is a public speaking company. One is healthcare consultation on...
Okay, he may have had some interaction or some distant thing. I don't think he was running the company day to day.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
But
yeah, he just had involved.
One thing I can say about Newt is that he, and I don't know all of his qualities, but he is very, very bright, and he does think more than one level down. He's a multi-level thinker, and whether you like him or not, or whether he's too conservative for you or whatever, he does think things through. I think he has some personal issues as well. I mean, I guess anybody you get in there is going to have that. But, I mean, issues that might work against him. But when he puts his mind to it, he's a multi-level thinker. and he can think things through and perhaps get to some interesting and maybe unusual or better solutions than a guy that's only thinking one or two levels, etc. He does have some leadership qualities, but he, like you said, he's been around for a long, long time. The distinction that I think people are making when they say, you know, career politician, they don't consider a Barack Obama a career politician, and yet he was a senator. He was right in the thick of it. You know, you can't get much closer to what's happening in politics than being a senator. But yeah, people don't think of him as a career politician necessarily because he was in the background, you know, and all that.
Yeah.
You can work for Washington and still be considered somewhat an outsider or not a career politician, where Newt Gingrich has been in the game and right in the front for more than a decade or two. He's been around for a long time. So some people would be turned off by that. Either way, we'll see. He's the front runner, and what's his name dropped out with the 999 program?
Yeah, Kane. Yeah, he just finally threw in the towel and said, you know what? I mean, the accusations just kept coming. I mean, either someone launched a horrendous smear campaign against him, or he's been sort of a, you know, playboy, I guess.
Well, I think it would be fair to say that the people that are rising up, especially this last woman who came up and who's had supposedly a 13-year relationship with him, just my opinion, I think he had a 13-year relationship with her, and I think that if he were to go on, more and more of that would come out, and it would be very difficult to hide 13 years worth of text, emails, money sent to her, all the other stuff that goes on. So, you know, you gotta, you know, in Italy, it's so funny because their presidents, you're expected to have trysts outside of your marriage. You know, that's just what happens out there. Those people, it's a whole different culture. They think of it differently. Men in power do this. That's what they do. And out there in Italy, they don't think of it the same way that America does. Not that I'm saying that they think about it correctly. I would prefer to not have a guy who's cheating on his wife, et cetera, et cetera. But in Italy, it's a whole different program. That's kind of almost expected of them, that they have these wild parties and these young girls and all this other stuff. Kind of goes along with their culture maybe more than it does ours. But if somebody's running in the United States, I want to know that he has some character qualities and that he can think clearly, even if there is a pretty woman standing next to him. Because some of these guys can't think clearly even if there's a pretty woman on a poster that's near them. And that's not those are not qualities that I want running the U.S. of A. Thanks for asking. Okay, let's go on to the euro and take a quick look at that. Real quick, there's not a lot of change in it today. We were down earlier today, but the euro, we're calling or saying that there is a we would like to see a breakout. The real forecast, let me put it into these terms. The real forecast was for the market to advance up to, from the last week and a half, we've been talking about the market bottoming where they were on November 21st and then advancing to 136.70. And that is still in play, but we don't really want to take the trade because of the uncertainties and other things. I think it would be wise to just give this some room and wait for the market to have an advance that gets it above 135.20 or so. Daily close above 135.20, and then just buy the silly thing. That's what we're going to do. So now there are some earlier entries, one of which we texted to our institutional people this morning, that you could buy the euro today if you wanted to be aggressive. This is when the market was down a little lower than where they are now. And that if somebody would have done that, they would have had a bit of a lead in the position now. At the time that we messaged that, they were probably roughly at about 133.80. They're up at 134.06 now. So there's a little bit of a lead in there. This is for the purpose of aggressive trading, but for those who want to take it easy and be able to sleep at nights, let's wait for the daily close above 135.20, and then you can just go long for the advance to 136.70 or higher. And again, I would normally have said today we would have messaged out like we did to the institutional people, you know, get long here, but because of the highly unusual conditions of the world and Europe, I think it's probably wiser to just say we definitely are willing to make less money on this for more certainty. So that's what we're going to do. We'll wait and see how that plays out.
Okay, and so...
That takes us into next week. That takes us into the week of December 13th. So...
So 135.20 was the number you just used?
Yeah, something like around there. I mean, okay. You can just pick a number in that area that, you know, that I want to see a close, a daily close above.
Gotcha.
And again, today was a day for an aggressive entry, but, you know, you have to watch this closely and be very careful. It's just like we always are, but extra careful because there could be an overnight thing and, you know, you want to get your sleep. You don't want to have to be struggling with this all the time. So for people who really, you know, are willing to take an aggressive position, we essentially went long today and everyone else will wait. The on-time week for the 136.70 is next week, the week of December 12th.
Okay, so the move that you're looking for is up to 136.70.
That's right. That is right.
Gotcha.
If something really bad happens, I might as well throw this out now. If something really bad were to happen and there was a break below critical levels, et cetera, and they started running them, I think there's a very high likelihood that this market would end up retesting the lows that were made in January of 2010, which is the 128, roughly 128.70 level. So this is one of the reasons we wanted to wait for them to get above that 135.20 area, but an aggressive can be long here, the same way that we were long the other day in gold, just getting in. That's what we told people today, just buy it. And if the market continues up and continues to move higher, they have a wonderful position start, they'll catch a bigger piece of the move because they took larger risk. They took the potential for, there was a potential for larger, the risk of being wrong was larger. That's a better way of putting it. And other than that, though, please do wait. I think it's wise to wait for the move above 135.20 on a daily close. And then if the market happened to be doing that and on that very day was way above 135.20, there's still 100 pips left, buy it anyway. Because, it, you know, let's say it's in the middle of the day and if you wait for the close, it might be up there by the time it closes. So sometimes that happens. And sometimes you just have to get in and take your best shot with that trade, understanding that there will be the usual pullbacks on the way up. But as we get closer to the on-time week, the odds favor a final move in that direction. So we'll put this together and see how this plays out over time. And we're going to talk about this trade every single day until it completes one way or the other. So
very good.
We'll be on. Yeah. So I think, let me just check if there's anything else of interest. Silver's quiet. Crude has gone, you know, we've had a big move up in crude last month. And I don't know if gasoline prices have really reflected this move up or not yet. But
I noticed some of the pump prices around here were down a couple of days ago.
Well, there you go. Bill O'Reilly for a while.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry?
No, I was just going to say.
I was going to say, Bill. Go ahead. We could do that all day, couldn't we?
I don't know how closely correlated anymore the oil and gas prices are. They used to be, seem to be, you know, fairly synchronized, but now there's quite a disparity. Oil can go up, gas goes down.
Yeah.
And then by the time, you know, gas starts to catch up with oil, because oil went up, now oil's back down again, so.
Right. One of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that the gas station owner has to make decisions that are similar to what traders have to make. He has to do some forecasting about where prices are going to be, because he is going to either buy the futures contract or he's going to buy the actual tanker right now to put into the ground at a certain price. He has a choice that he can make, very much in the same way that a farmer can hold on to his crop and sell it later or sell it now. He can put it into the grain silo and wait for higher prices, etc. So the guy that's running the gas station isn't just able, it's not quite as simple, and again, people simplify these things because they're not in the business, they don't know all the complexities that go on. It's very easy to point the finger and accuse. But the fact is that the guy that has stuff in the ground already, his that he paid a certain price for, if the market goes up and you could say, well, he bought that for cheaper, yeah, that might be true, and he's raising his prices. But he's raising his prices partially because he is going to have to pay a whole lot more on future deliveries, and the stuff that he pays more for future deliveries, the price may go down and he may have to lower his price because prices have gone down and he's paid more for what he's got in the ground. He's got a juggling act that he has to do there, and it's not quite as easy as you would think to operate that business and do it successfully. There are periods of time where a gas station can have gasoline that's in his ground, you know, in the ground below his station, being ready to be pumped up, that he's paid more for that than he's selling it for. And that's not a good position to be in. He's trying to make it as even as possible, or at best to try to make it a profit. Obviously, he wants to be able to buy it for less and sell it for more, but and in many cases, they're able to do that, but not in all cases. And it gets to be a tricky thing because those deliveries that he's asking for are sometimes 6 months or further out. And price changes, world events, and all that kind of stuff can make things happen. So just remember that it isn't quite as easy for those guys to just stand around and get, you know, just raise their price and now they're just nailing it. Bill O'Reilly, as much as I do respect him because he's very bright and he makes a lot of very salient, well thought out points, he happens to believe that the speculators, you know, he's one of the they guys, they are running the price up. But there isn't a they running the price up. There is, the price is running up because it does that when supply is less than demand. And that means supply for contracts or supply for the fuel itself, whatever, it's running up. If it was that easy for speculators to get together and just run prices up, then all you'd have to do is get a bunch of speculators together and run the prices up. And if you go back over the history of that contract, you can go back and see that crude was down at $12 and $15 a barrel for 20 years. Where were the speculators then running the prices up? You know, it happens because of much bigger forces than just speculators. Speculators are often themselves a result of those bigger forces. They're not the original cause to make the market go up. They're speculating because the market's going up. So he got that wrong, but a lot of people don't understand the mechanism of the market and that it really is fair and the price is, you know, quote unquote fair because that's where the market is. It's a free market system. That's how it works. That's how we, that's what we've all agreed upon. So crude today is at $101 and that's a fair price for crude today because it's based on the market price. That's what it fluctuates up and down, just like currencies do. And just like every object in the universe does, it fluctuates. So you'd be breaking, you know, breaking a universal law trying to get something to sit at a fixed price.
Do you have a
When I was younger, coffee had gone up to $7. I remember thinking, God, $7 for a can of coffee? That's just insane. That was before I moved out here. That was over 30 years ago. I remember seeing that. Go ahead.
I remember as a kid, sugar went on some incredible run. It went to like. I can't remember exactly, but I remember, and I was pretty young, I don't know, 7, 8, something like that, but I remember my grandparents, my parents talking about sugar and how it was worth its weight in gold, and it was at some extraordinarily high price. This would have been probably in the mid-60s, I guess, and I don't know what was going on back then or how much it actually went up to, but it was... extraordinary. I'll have to Google that.
No, it was, and I remember in my home, and I'm sure some of the listeners know too, maybe they had families like this, but some of our relatives would come over, and I was just a boy. I mean, I was 12 or 10 or whatever, and they would sit in the living room, and the women would be talking and complaining about how meat prices had gone up 4 cents a pound, or, you know, potatoes were up something. Everything was always a complaint about something going up X number of cents a pound when they were at the store, because this is what they do. They go shop, they provide for the home, they're collecting provisions, all that stuff, and they would be complaining about the prices. I used to think to myself, so what? 4 cents a pound? I mean, how, you know, how many pounds are you buying and how much does that really matter? I mean, if you bought 3 pounds of the stuff, you just spent 16 cents or whatever, 12 cents. But that's people look at that. And you've seen, we've seen that just the banks recently trying to do $5 a month, get $5 a month from people because the government had changed some regulation that they wanted to, you know, compensate for. You know, that didn't go over real big with people. $5 a month in this economy really means a lot to people.
Yeah.
And those banks shut that stuff down right away because they lost hundreds of millions of dollars worth of accounts. Credit unions reported a huge influx of money, and that's not money that's going to walk back into the bank anytime soon. So, you know, you can pretty much rest assured that the banks are not going to be doing any little fee hikes anytime soon because they just took a big hit on hundreds of millions of dollars worth of deposits that are now in credit unions, and that money, once it's parked there, it's going to be years before those people pull that money out and move it back. You know, you usually don't get a phone call from a bank, "Hi, this is Sally from Bank of America. How are you? Good. Well, we recently noticed that you moved $240,000 into a credit union, and, well, we're wondering, you know, if there's anything we can do to, you know, help you make the decision to bring it back." You know, that phone call doesn't come. That's not how they don't do that. If I was running a bank, that's what I'd be doing, though. I'd be trying to get some of those deposits back. But it's not going to happen, and those people that left angrily, and the fact that they had to go through the trouble of, you know, getting a new account, moving the money, changing addresses, all that other stuff that goes on, well, they're not going to be moving it back anytime soon. So banks just learned the lesson that $5 means a whole lot to people, especially when it is sort of gratuitous, when we're already paying $3 at terminals for cash and this and that. So you can pretty much assure yourself that banks are not going to be hitting you with any new bounced up fees anytime soon because they just took a real whacking, especially Bank of America, lost customer deposits. And that's the business they're in, is customer deposits. So anyway, just assuring people, trying to make people feel warm and happy about staying at their current bank because it isn't going to happen for a while. They won't be raising anything. So.
Hey, there's a couple people that have asked if you could recap your outlook on the S&P 500 E-mini.
I wish I could. The S&P 500 has done some unusual things. If you will take a look at every other market, take a look at, let's just go through this real quick. Take a look at gold. We had forecast in the S&P that December 1st plus or minus a day would be a top. Take a look at gold. It made a top on December 2nd, has sold off, you know, $55 or more. Take a look at the euro. These are markets that we knew we had these dates in anyway, and the S&P was one of them. The euro was going to top on December 1st, plus or minus a day, and it did as well. It topped, and it's been selling off. This is its second day of the sell-off. But now look at the S&P. This goes to show that in spite of the fact that one of my favorite kind of cardinal techniques of looking for turning points in other markets and tying them in with the market that we're also forecasting in can help make that turn more real, make it happen. That's not what happened. On top of that, the market has remained up here and has continued to test some critical levels on the upside beyond the scope of that turn. So for the time being, we've had this question from a lot of our from institutional people as well. You know, what do we do here? Do we buy or do we sell? And when I don't know something, I don't make an effort to sound like I know. I don't know at this particular point, except to say that you can see under normal conditions what the other markets did. A number of stocks, one of the ones that we follow is called GORO, G-O-R-O. It's a stock that has to do with gold. That turned right on December 1st as well. A lot of these things that we look at all had their turns, but the S&P didn't. Now, do you just go, "Oh, I guess that didn't work," or do you say, "Well, that's very interesting. Something else is at work here," and obviously something else is at work. That means under normal conditions, I might say, well, then we would have substantially higher prices to go. But I can't say that here for a number of reasons. So my outlook on the S&P is absolutely neutral right now, and I wouldn't want anyone to read anything into the S&P unless they know something better and wait for the S&P to show us something that's clear so that we can take the next move. The last thing you want to be doing is trying to place a so-called bet when you really don't know what's going on and you don't have a reason to be in. You're just doing it. So go to a different market where it is working. you know, the euro and gold and Goro and a number of these other stocks all turned very nicely on that date. The S&P didn't. Under more usual conditions, if this had happened, I would be saying, yes, much higher prices would be coming. But I'm at a point right now where I'm going to simply state I have a completely neutral outlook on the S&P right now, and until I get better information, I'm going to leave it at that for the time being.
Okay.
So that's where we are on it. You have to be careful, you know, don't try to overstep your boundaries in the trading. You can think about it and you can surmise about it, but when it comes to actually trading it, let's trade what we really understand and know and not fool around with don't fool around with your money. Don't waste your money trying to guess, because guessing doesn't take you very far. So anything I do have, other than the shorter term reflected wave stuff that people that come to our course have, which it has been very good at on the intraday swings here, it's been beautiful. Those are trades for intraday, but Dwayne's really asking me a question about, or the fellow is, about a longer term view. Are we going to go down from this juncture, or are we going up from here? And I'm completely neutral on it right now, and I'll update it as soon as I have something that flips all my switches.
Actually, one of the requests for that was from Barb. Barb, welcome to the show. We don't get a lot of women on the radio program or trading futures. So
we don't get a lot of women in other ways either. We just this is what we do with our life.
I'm happily looking married, in front of these screens. 30 years, thank you.
That's right.
Anyway, Barb, welcome to the show, and to any of the other ladies. I don't know if I think that's the politically correct term these days. You can't say gals. I know that. All right.
Why?
I don't know. It's frowned upon. Like, you know, a mature business lady doesn't want to be called a chick or a gal or a babe. I mean, she wants to be called a lady or a woman.
Okay.
I mean, that's just the way it is. Now, that may change in 10 years. I don't know. But anyway, Barb, hopefully you know we're just being good-natured here. That's what we do. And
we do it very well.
Gals. Oh, Barb does. She likes. No.
Does she have a question?
No. Yeah, her question was if you could, had you already covered the E-mini? And I assume by the E-mini, Barb, that you were talking about the S&P specifically. David, I haven't yet twisted his arm far enough to get him to go to work on the Dow E-mini, the YM, but I'm working it to the best of my ability. We did cover the Euro 6E. David is looking for that to move higher. Also, David, I do get requests from time to time about the NQ. Now, I personally don't watch the NQ, and we don't trade it in the live trading room. Although somebody asked me the other day if they took our free trial in the live trading room, if we would be willing to look at the NQ during their week. And I said, well, yeah, we can take a look at it and see how it looks. Have you had requests for the NQ, and is it something you envision taking a closer look at or having a Messenger Pro product for in the future?
We have had some requests for the NQ. I've also had some requests for me to sing songs from the 40s, love songs from the 40s, which are very beautiful. I'm just joking.
Okay, here's two valuable life skills you gained from watching Gomer Pyle. You know what they are?
What is it?
You know what a Quonset hut is, and you can sing Oh My Papa.
Well, there you are.
There you are. Okay,
we're back to the
NQ.
No, the NQ, as I'm looking at it right now, and there's a different symbol for it. Maybe Bert can give us the better symbol for it. I'm looking at the composite. It's a market that gaps quite a bit. I don't have the overnight, and I would prefer to have the overnight on it when doing any forecasting. Anything from daily and larger, I like to use the overnight. That is actually useful to me. Anything daily and smaller, I don't. So from a daily up, size up, I don't have anything immediate on it. But I will get, I tell you what, why don't we add that in to our list of things, and let me get the correct symbol from, because I'm looking at it and I see a lot of gaps here, and I want to have those filled in with the overnight.
I've got a Globex chart up here. Are you looking for daily? Is that what you want to see?
Yeah.
Can you see my screen?
I do.
Okay, let's just. All right, there's daily.
Okay.
And we can just pull this down out of the way. Now that's daily with Globex.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll take a look at that, and maybe we can add that in. This is a market, as I understand it, there. This is the tech stocks, right?
Yes, correct.
And these are very volatile stocks, and this can make for very, very volatile and very good trading and swings to very important levels. One thing I will have to do is figure out the base number for this market, because it's a separate index from the S&P and the Dow. It may have the same or may have a different one, but we'll find out. And so it might take me a day or so to get it all together. But to do the kind of forecasting where we're forecasting larger moves to specific price levels that are due on specific dates, I'll have to put a little time in and see. But in order to do that, I'll contact Burke and get the full symbol so that we get the overnight and everything else that you're showing there.
NQZ1 on Globex.
Is that what it is?
Uh-huh. At least that's what it is for our system, David. I think for you it may be different.
We don't have that. Doesn't show up for us that way.
Yeah, you would have some. Burke can tell you what that is. Patrick has a question for you. Okay. On your last roadmap, was that based on reflected wave, or was it some other thing?
Is he referring to the S&P?
Patrick, are you referring to the S&P?
If he is referring to the S&P, it was a combined piece where both techniques were indicating a particular turn and a particular move to certain levels. And that's one of the reasons why that, combined with many other markets that had the same indications, gave us, we've made hundreds of these or whatever on your program. This one happened to be, for one reason or another in the S&P, something else is actually at work, something larger. Now, I do want to say also that last week was one of the largest up weeks in the history of the market. Yet. So already something really big and powerful is at work there that could very easily push through a signal like this. That's an unusual event all by itself. That these other markets, that the euro and the gold, didn't have those, that type of huge week up, etc. So the S&P has something larger at work than merely this particular indication. And so in many ways, even though from our limited viewpoint, the way that we look at markets, it appears that it's not acting correctly. It is acting correctly. It's just that we are not taking into account that larger force. We didn't identify it, and had we identified it, we would have had a different forecast. In the vast majority of cases, the roadmaps run beautifully to their numbers and turn where they're supposed to turn, because in most cases, it's very easy to see one or two levels out and know what is potentially going to interfere with that setup. In this particular case, we didn't see that. It wasn't as easy to see, and something else is operating here. So this was for the S&P. I think his question was for the
yes,
S&P.
It was the
and
S&P.
It combined, it combined both reflected wave and roadmaps. And so, again, in every single case, if you will learn to use a stop and respect that stop, there are going to be times where whatever you have, for whatever reason, if it doesn't work, you don't want to be on the wrong side of that. Had this worked a little differently, we might have been able to say, well, now's the time to go long, this is an inversion, or this is such and such. We don't have that either. That's why I'm saying that we're neutral on the S&P. It's just been able to do something that we were not able to put together in advance, and a larger force is at work. And rather than worrying myself about it right now, what we're going to do is just remain neutral. And then when the market starts to show anything close to more normal behavior, we'll find the next move in the S&P, which shouldn't be too many days off from here, and then be able to trade it. But I talk to a lot of traders, and a lot of people seem to be scratching their heads to some degree, whatever their technique, about where the S&P is. And there's nothing wrong with just saying, I don't know. And as a trader, you don't have to know everything. You just have to know when you're trading that you've got your high probability set up there, and that you're trading based upon high probabilities, not on money, not on making money. The making money will take care of itself. The high probability setup is the skill that you have to learn. Trading, getting in and out and all that, that's learnable and it's a skill as well. But none of it really works unless you have high probabilities in your favor. So the high probability is the most crucial thing. And if they don't show you something of high probability, you don't act in that particular market. You just simply wait for that market to show it to you again. Or if you happen to be in the market and it does something it shouldn't or normally wouldn't do under those situations, you allow yourself to be stopped out. That way, you will take a loss on that particular position. And that loss means that you've stopped the damage. If they're going to run them, if they're going to have, you know, a 50-point day up because you don't know where the market is and suddenly you're in it, you don't want to be in that 50 points. If you have to take a 4 or 5 point loss on something, whatever it is, you book that and you may be able to take advantage of that further move, maybe not. But what you can take advantage of is your knowledge of what high probability trades look like, how they look, and how to trade them, and put yourself on the right side the majority of the time. That's all you're trying to do here. If perfection was possible, then it would be a worthy goal to go and try to be perfect. But it's much better to learn how to be gracefully imperfect, because that's what's really going to happen. And gracefully means that, oh, okay, this isn't doing what we thought it would do, and we step aside. And it also means that when the market is running to your target, like as we just had in gold yesterday, the 40-point move down, whatever, when it is moving in your direction, that you also gracefully know how to trade it to the target, that you're not cutting yourself short when you are right. That's been an issue that I've struggled with for a number of years, and I have improved my skill set with regard to that. I'm not where I want to be yet, but everybody changes a little bit when you get into the market, when you actually have your money in the market, and depending on your psychology of the day or, you know, any number of things, you may be willing to hold longer or whatever. I'm working at getting to hold for longer and longer targets, because once the roadmap is underway and the market really is running and has confirmed itself, those of you who've been on the radio program have seen for yourself, it virtually hits the target every time once it's been confirmed. And that's put it this way, very, very high percentage of the time. It's beyond the 90s. And I rarely talk about percentages, but I've gone over all of them, every one that we've issued. And so it'll run to those targets, and you should be holding, if you can, for the majority of those targets, the majority of the distance of those targets. And that's sort of the final frontier for me in my trading, is to improve my use of the roadmap and any other technique to hold for the larger target. Because it's my belief that one trade of 40 points, as an example, to pick up 40 points in gold, is worth more than an equal number of shorter-term day trades that you might have in that same time period. That if you were simply day trading, which we do, we day trade as well, and so does Dwayne, but if you were simply day trading, that you wouldn't make that many points as you would in a single trade that runs and that you held for that target. You would do better in that period of time. Now, we don't have a roadmap every day. The roadmaps require certain conditions to set up, and that's where day trading comes in, is between those times. But when those conditions set up, I try to trade either more aggressively or in some way, shape, or form, either more contracts or holding for longer periods of time to try to take as much advantage as I can of the fact that this is going to be a trade that's going to outdo whatever the heck I can do in my day trading in that same period of time. And I want to, you know, book that, and then I'm at a new level in my account, et cetera. And then if everything goes well in my trading, all I have to do is worry that the brokerage isn't going to take my money, steal it out of my account, and bet it on European bonds. And as long as that doesn't happen, I'm ahead. And that's a good feeling. So, I mean, where does it end? You know, you just can't get it. You know, you get it, finally get it right in the markets, and now the brokerage is gambling with your money, and they don't know how to do it.
Didn't I read that the CFTC is trying to pass some kind of new thing where it will be okay to do that?
It's already okay to do that. The brokerage is allowed to take segregated company your funds and put them into overnight repos and things like that, where they get a small amount of interest from the total amount of funds that are there. What they're not allowed to do and have never been allowed to do is take segregated company customer funds and bet net long or short on instruments of their own choice. That's never been allowed, and they're never going to allow that. That's your money. They can't put bets on it. They can't be betting on hard eight with customer funds. That's not going to happen. They're allowed to do what banks do with your money as well. Banks take your cash and your deposits, and they put, if you have a bank account with tens of thousands of dollars in it, and you're not in a CD of some kind earning some interest, and even if you are, they're going to take those funds and they're going to put them in overnight repos. They're making money on your money, but they're not betting on, they're not taking net long and net short positions in equities or in bonds or something like that. They're simply earning interest rate off of your money. Now, if the bank, it's insured at a bank, that's another thing, and the brokerages are not insured. So, you know, it worries me, honestly, some, because I've had, well, let's just put it this way. I mean, I wouldn't want to put a large amount of money right now, myself, in a brokerage. Period. They've scared me. I mean, that, you know, I'll tell it right to Bert. I'm a little scared because I don't know what these freaking people are doing. And
hey, here's
I know people who have lost seven-figure money. I'm talking, I know people who have seven-figure accounts who have not gotten all their money back. And I'm not happy about that. I'm pissed off at that. And I'm outright angry that a system that I thought was decently safe, that these people can just go in and do that and get away with it that long. So, no, I'm not interested right now in putting any large money in a brokerage account, because it scares me. I don't know what the next trick and what the next hat's going to fall. Oh, well, here's another broker that did this. You know, a little Kurt, worried about that.
This just out on the Wall Street Journal about 45 minutes ago. As of September 30th, there were 123 futures merchants registered with the CFTC, representing a total of $155 billion in customer assets. MF Global's roughly $5.5 billion in customer assets were not included in that total. As part of its vote on yesterday, the CFTC banned so-called in-house repurchase agreements, or repos, in which one part of a futures firm swaps customer assets for securities such as municipal bonds or foreign government bonds held at another part of the firm, pocketing the higher interest rates the securities yield. Critics said the arrangement created several potential conflicts of interest. The agency also voted to prohibit futures firms from using customer cash to invest in foreign sovereign debt and to restrict investments in money market mutual funds, investments in treasuries, U.S. agency debt, as well as certain corporate notes would still be permitted. So that's kind of the latest news
about
that. Now that's how they voted, but I don't know. Does that still need to be approved by Congress or something?
It probably does. That's their intention. But you know, it goes back to the same thing. We've got these agencies that are sitting there, supposedly monitoring. You know, you got the Securities Exchange Commission, Commodities Futures Trading Commission, NFA. It goes on and on and on. Yet these people were doing this for a long period of time, and it finally popped on them. And where was the regulation? Where were the people that are supposed to be monitoring this when $1.3 billion worth of customer money is being bet on? How is that not covered? How is that missed? Who is responsible? How come those people have a job that missed that? That these people, so in other words, any brokers that wants to do this, just go in and decide to do this. There's nobody watching. There's nobody, you know, managing this. I mean, how does that happen? I'd like somebody to answer. I'd like the government should be in front of the government. Aside from the people that did it, the government should be up in front of Congress testifying, saying, well, yeah, who is in charge of this brokerage? Who's supposed to be watching this stuff? Because that guy wasn't watching.
Well, Corzine does, you know, he is being called to, I mentioned earlier, to testify before some Senate subcommittee.
Right, and what do you think his testimony is going to be? Something like, I take the fifth?
I have no, you know.
Something like, I don't remember at this time? You know, what do you think he's going to say in front of them? He's not going to say anything. That's what he's going to say, because he's on the hot seat.
He's going to
say, I had no knowledge, I don't remember, I take the fifth.
I never had sex with that woman.
Right.
That's what he's going to say. No, I mean he's kind of, I don't think there's any question. I don't think he's denying guilt. Is he? Is he said? Oh, I didn't. I mean, there's no way he can say I didn't do that because it's obvious. I mean, it's right, isn't it? Without question, that he did do that.
No, it's not without question. Oh. No, it's not. It's not without
Has
question.
Has he denied? That
they're
he
bringing
did
him.
It?
They're bringing him in front of there because they don't know what the situation is. Like we don't. All we know is he stepped down.
Yeah.
But
and half of them
we
probably
don't
even understand what it is. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
The average person on the street doesn't know what a futures contract is or a futures clearinghouse. And so there's people sitting on that committee that the discussion, whatever that discussion is going to be way over their head.
It might be. I think many of those people themselves trade in the markets, like a number of our top politicians who trade on the inside information of the very rules that they make that are about to change something that they've been. I think they know, Dwayne.
Okay.
I think they're all kind of on the inside scoop on what futures and stocks are, to be honest with you. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, well, they know how to make a call to their broker and go, hey, we just passed this, so. Do what you can with it. But, yeah, I understand. Most of them are educated individuals, and so they probably understand segregated funds. But it does get a little convoluted, at some point.
Yeah, no doubt. Depending on also the complexity of the – I mean, if they did some really bizarre swap derivative thing with, Euro bonds and some other – against some other thing, hedged against this, using options, it'll be very confusing. But the net thing is that they were placing bets with customer funds, net long, net short bets, and they looked to profit from it. And the customers weren't going to be getting any gains from their profit. All we did is take losses as customers.
Right. Now, someone mentioned early on in the chat, let me see if I can scroll back and find that. And then I've got one final question for you.
Okay, and that is, when will I leave?
No, it's...
When will you stop talking?
It's about soybeans, if you have anything at all on soybeans. But there was... If someone who was an MF Global... Okay, one of our listeners, he said that he received 60% of his trading account back from MF Global already.
Right.
And has received forms to make claims to the trustee for the remainder.
You're right. Good.
Now, okay, MF Global had $5 billion on deposit. The total of all the clearing firms is 130-something billion, that number I just quoted. And the way the thing is supposed to work... All the members that are a party to this group, they've all, made some kind of blood oath. They pricked their fingers and did the thing and said, okay, if anybody defaults, the rest of us will pony up and make it good. So why that hasn't happened or isn't happening, it's an extraordinarily large amount of money, but that's the deal.
Well, I hope that's right, and I think that'd be very good for the industry, because it has happened in the past where that hasn't happened and people just lost money. They make a claim that nobody has lost money, but I know traders who have been in another brokerage where something similar happened and they weren't made whole. It would be very good for them to make everybody whole. Like I said, for the whole industry,
right?
Because it's a mess. That something like this could even happen. And I do think, and I'm just going to say it one more time, it would be really brilliant if they would take the very government regulators who are supposed to be watching this stuff and find out how this company can get away with that stuff while they're managing. They have this, responsibility that they're supposed to manage these people's funds, segregate them, not use them. And that was just going on day by day. And not one regulatory body caught it. Not one. How is that? That's what I'd like to know.
Good question. All right, you got anything on beans?
Well, we went long in beans today.
You did?
Yes, we did. We had a trade earlier today in beans where we bought the bean markets. If you'll give me just a minute, I'll tell you exactly where. And it will take me a minute here to get it back up. We had bought the market at 11:24. We have a stop in at 11:22. We had our ordinary exit at 11:27. So they're trading right now at 11:27. So we'll see. And they're going to close here.
Yeah, they close in, what, five minutes?
Yeah. So any remaining position is going to be held on the overnight for this. We're starting to, you know, the market is showing some action here that's a little bit cleaner than what we've seen recently. So you may start seeing some more trades in this particular market. This market had a December 5th top, a December 6th top, which came one day early. Today, they continued down much lower or somewhat lower. They're closing above $11.20. This is January soybeans, by the way. And continued closes above $11.20 will be the more bullish position, and then any subsequent breakout later would indicate an advance up to $11.87. Now, that's down the road a little bit, but let's let them show this part of the trade first. This is the very earliest section of that. So we'll watch this and we'll see, and I'll let you know tomorrow. But, yeah, we're in a trade on the overnight right now.
Okay. All right, David.
And that's about it. Dwayne, so pleasure being on the show. S&P, look at how quiet this is. This is just a, you know, blissfully quiet market. They don't have any intention on moving this thing around today. So
nope, it is peculiarly quiet here.
Was that yes, it
quiet
is
quiet before the storm kind of thing.
Yeah. So I'll plan on seeing you tomorrow. Thank you for the questions, everyone, and I hope we'll have more to talk about tomorrow as the week progresses, and I look forward to it.
David, thanks so much.
Thanks, Dwayne, for being on the show, having me on the show. See you tomorrow.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you. With each day comes a new way.
All right, guys, that's also my cue to get up and get on out. I normally leave the charts running after the broadcast. Today, however, I'm going to have to close the webinar because I have some work to do and I need the big screen to do it on. So my apologies for that. Again, if you are visiting us, you're new, you came in from David's webinar, he's had a couple here in the past week, we welcome you. If you have any questions at all, please don't hesitate to ask them during the broadcast or send an email to support@cfrn.net. If you have questions about taking the free trial, about downloading your platform, about getting indicators installed on your chart, give Bert and Leslie a call at 866-928-3310. Again, that's 866-928-3310. Bert or Leslie One will usually answer the phone by the third ring. If you're having any issues with downloading your platform or whatever it might be, I mean, they're just great folks to talk to. They've got many years of experience in the business of trading futures. So whatever questions you may have, they are the people very qualified to answer those. We'll get you into the free trial. We'll get you into the live trading room. You can hang out with us for 5 full days, 2 hours a day. You'll see every trade we take, long, short, break even, stopped out. We keep both hands on top of the desk. We don't do any shenanigans. We don't tell you it's a good time to get out if you're long or if you're short. We actually say we have a trade setting up. We show you what the trade setup looks like. You see it on the chart. And we tell you at what price we'll enter the market. If we're buying on a pullback, we'll say, okay, at this price, we're going to go long. And then we sit and we wait for price to pull back to that area. And then you see right on the screen, you see the DOM. We get triggered long or short, whatever the case might be, into the trade. And then we keep the DOM visible so that you're able to see how we manage the trade. Okay? If it's just an intraday trade and we're looking to take 2 points, sometimes it'll run very quickly to the 2-point target. Fine, that's great. Other times, you'll see us at 1 point, lock something in, At one point, you'll see us perhaps bring our stop to break even or break even plus a point. Okay. The point I'm making right now is just that we do everything out in the open. We're very transparent. We have nothing to hide. We want you to understand what we do, exactly how we do it, so that you can make an intelligent and informed decision at the end of your 5-day free trial as to whether or not becoming a CFRN partner is what's in your best interest. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And Michael Z will be on the show with us later this week. As far as I know, he's still coming to Vegas. He arrives today, I believe it is. And so I'll check with David, and I'll find out if tomorrow we can get a good idea of what time he's going to actually be on the show. And I'll put that on the blog tonight, possibly shoot out a little email alert, or I'll at least tweet the alert. And our hope, our goal, is to have him on not just once. Rather than bring him on for 45 minutes and wear him out, I would prefer, if we could, he's going to be at David's office, I think, for an entire week. I'd love to have him on 10, 15 minutes a day so that we don't interrupt his trading too much. He does trade for a living. So, you know, get him on for 10, 15 minutes, ask him a few questions, let you guys email in some questions or text in some questions, and then have him back on again the following day. That's the perfect scenario. That's what I'm going to shoot for. So I'll talk to David off the air. I'll find out if he will be on tomorrow, if so, what time, and then I'll let you guys know on the blog and on the Twitter feed, and again, possibly even send you out an email. All right, that's going to do it. One more time, to take the free trial, no credit card required, no obligation, cfrn.net/apply. It really is that easy. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.